Well, two items of news for us to chew on today. One is the claim strawberries are the food most contaminated with pesticide residues. The other is a denial of the claim that we must use pesticides to feed the world. Chewing on both at the same time leads us to ask, can we feed the world without pesticides?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1097th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It is my pleasure to be here.
Do you think we can feed the world without pesticides?
Boy, I sure hope so.
Well, you hope so, but do you think we can?
Oh, man. That's a good question, sir. I'm not sure I have the answer.
Well, let's chew on it and see where it takes
us. Let's do it.
Folks, I happen to like strawberries. They're a happy food filled with vitamins, minerals, and sweetness. I also like the people who grow strawberries for a living. They're part riverboat gambler, high-tech engineer, and spiritual seeker. When all grows right, strawberry farmers can make a ton of money. But when something grows wrong, they can lose a ton of money. You can bet your bottom dollar, as strawberries farmers tend to do, that they do everything they can to make certain everything grows right. And so when the Environmental Working Group released its annual list of Dirty Dozen Foods, it gave me pause to see strawberries once again listed as the food most contaminated with pesticides. Get this. The list claims that USDA conducted tests between 2014 and 15 that showed 99% of the strawberries tested contained pesticide residues, with the average sampling containing 7.7 different pesticides, with one sample containing 21 different pesticides. USDA found 74 different pesticides in various combinations in the strawberry sampling, 88% of which came from the U.S. farmers, and the remaining percentage coming from Mexico. The other item of news that came from the United Nations in the form of a report that dispels the long-held assertion of agriculture that pesticides are needed to feed the world. It's a myth, said Hillel Elver, the UN Special Rapporteur on the right to grow food. Using pesticides has nothing to do with getting rid of hunger. By 2050, the world's population will reportedly increase by 2 billion people. As 1/9 of the world's population is already suffering from chronic hunger, and so many more are on the way, we wonder about how we can feed the future, if not with the pesticides that now seem to be in everything, everywhere. And so we ask, can we feed the present and the future without pesticides? Well, tuning in from with us to join us today from London, we have Dr. Hillel Elver, who is a professor of international law and UN Special Rapporteur on the right to grow food. Welcome to the Food Chain, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Got you. Thank you very much. You sound great. Thank you for joining us today. We're really appreciative of your joining us. So, you know, I've done 1,000, this is my 1,097th Food Chain Radio Show, and I've never had the opportunity to talk with a rapporteur before. What exactly are you?
Okay, I think it's better to explain what does that mean, special rapporteur, because many of the American audience wouldn't really know or are not very familiar with it. The United Nations Human Rights Council have several kind of special rapporteurs on specific human rights issues. For instance, right to water, right to food, right to health, or freedom of speech, or freedom of religion. Many of the thematic human rights issues have one special rapporteur, that they have a global reach, and they are appointed by the Human Rights Council at global level, and they are completely independent. They are independent their own nationalities, nation states, and independent from the United Nations. So their report will have a completely objective investigation in relation to their specific mandate. That's what we call special rapporteur on right to food. In my case, I have four reports in a year, two reports of the thematic, which one of them about pesticides right now, and also we do mission trips and picking countries that we are going and investigating the food and agricultural policy, whether or not it's applicable and right in relation to human rights violations, or is whether or not there is a violation.
I think it would be fun to tell the audience from where your accent comes. That sounds beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. But the beautiful part is really appreciated. And I am from Turkey originally, but I live in the United States, and I have two citizenships, actually. Mm-hmm. That's my accent is coming from.
And you're a research professor at the University of California at Santa Barbara, specializing in international law.
Yes, and also I'm a global distinguished fellow at the UCLA Law School. They have a Resnick food law and policy program, and I'm affiliated with them. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do in your spare time?
That's
just a bad joke, Hillel.
Spare time. Yeah.
It sounds like you're one very busy girl.
Yeah, I wish I would have it now. For instance, right now I'm in London because I just recently came from Scotland. The reason was the government of Scotland invited me, basically Parliament. I gave a talk to them because they have a new bill in the Parliament, a Good Food Nation Bill, which basically they are trying to make food security policies with the human rights approach. So that was my reason that I'm in London right now. But I'm coming back to U.S. soon, and then we'll go to Zambia for my mission trip.
Wow.
So there are lots of things in next few months or a few years. This position, let me tell you, it's a three years twice. Time zone, which is altogether 6 years, the position. After 6 years, some other person comes and take the position from me.
Well, what an interesting position it is. Special rapporteur on the right to food. So I'd like to pick that up before we go on with respect to the right to food. And I'm just thinking about what I have learned about food from watching the Animals Eating Animals channel on television. And I'm just wondering, who gives us, where did food, and who gives it to us, or how, where does that come from, the right to food?
Okay, it basically comes from 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Right after the Second World War, United Nations established, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights listed various kind of human rights principles. Some of them are civil and political rights, some of them are economic and social rights. And then in 1966, there are two covenants became a law. One of them is economic, social, and cultural rights. The right to food is one of them. It is ironically the economic, social, and cultural rights are not really popular in the developed world because the Western countries, especially U.S. and other Europe, they don't really consider economic and social rights a part of the human rights concept. They are basically focusing on civil and political rights. So that's why they're not well known in the U.S., but it's very well known in the rest of the world.
So essentially what it says is that the U.N. is telling people that everybody has the right to food, and you don't have any right to deprive anybody of food. Is that about the extent of it right there?
Well, we should not really misunderstand or misinterpret what is that mean, right to food. Right to food doesn't mean governments will give you a free food because you have a right. The responsibility of the government to establish a system that you will be able to either buy food or you will be able to produce your own food.
There you go.
It's about the economic conditions that we have to have.
Good. Now, we're going to take a quick break, Khalil, but when we come back, we're going to take that on the issue that you bring up, that do we need pesticides to feed the world? Khalil says no, so let's follow up. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, today we're talking with Dr. Khalil Elver, Professor of International Law and UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Grow Food. Right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends, do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been told probably about 700 million times that agriculture needs pesticides to feed the world and the world's future populations. But wait, what's this? Dr. Khalil Elver comes along and says, that's a myth. Pesticides have nothing to do with feeding the world's hungry. Well, that's quite an assertion. So that's where we're going today, folks. Do we need pesticides to feed the world? And we have Dr. Khalil with us here all the way from jolly old England today. So, Dr. Khalil, you travel around the world and you've seen a lot of things. You're in Scotland, from Scotland to the U.S. to Zambia. Are we using too many pesticides out there? We seem to be getting along with them okay here in the United States, although some of our food seems to have a lot of them in them, but we seem to somehow get along with it. Are we using too many pesticides in the world? What do you think?
Well, actually, if you look at the statistics and the sales of the pesticides, it's increasing dramatically last 2-3 decades. That's part of it. The production-oriented industrial agriculture is becoming extremely successful, and this monoculture industrial agriculture needs more pesticides. So that's why we are using, more you use the pesticides, more you need. It's a kind of vicious cycle, let's put it this way. That's why the pesticide use are growing, especially in developed countries. In developing countries, less, because also pesticides, which is chemicals, are expensive. So you need certain kind of economic power to use more pesticides than you need it. And in many times, the pesticides should not be really used as much as some farmers use, because there is a lack of also understanding and how to use it, how to make it. It needs a very kind of important training program for farmers.
You know, I had an occasion to be on a consulting job on the island of Cyprus, and there was a beautiful agricultural plateau upon which things grew very well. And I came across a dump, a place where people threw discarded materials near one of the farm fields. And it was filled with empty containers of pesticides. And I looked at that and I thought, my goodness, they're using enough pesticides on this little tiny field to kill, you know, all the bugs in the world. I'm just wondering if there are any, you know, if we have the technological skills in the developed world to use these materials effectively.
Well, there is no question about it. The more you get sophisticated, the more you understand the dangers of pesticides and using Wesselmann pesticides. And also some new pesticides actually are not as dangerous as used to be, that many of the developed countries stop using it. But the problem is that basically highly hazardous pesticides even stop being used by developed countries, still in developing countries are in use because it's cheaper, and many times the countries that they cannot sell internally, domestically, they can still export these pesticides to developing countries. From the human rights perspective, we are looking at these issues that the regulations are different and there are double standards. These are things that we try to put in our report.
Okay, so here in the United States, we are really finely tuning our abilities to use pesticides, and we're relying on pesticides that are much less toxic and last much less longer than the more powerful varieties, but other countries can still use those varieties and do. And you talk about the consequence of acute poisoning death. How many people do you estimate are being poisoned to death by these acutely toxic pesticides?
You know, that's a very interesting problem around the world because the statistics are not really completely reliable. There's 200,000 acute poisoning, which I put in my report. I got lots of answers on this issue and saying that, oh, this is a certain kind of years, but not always 200,000 people dying acute food poisoning. But it turned out to be there is a significant of death, especially in I'm talking about the developing countries, because 99% of the acute poisoning that comes from a kind of like accidents in the developing countries. There is also suicide problem. Commit suicide is basically in developing countries like Sri Lanka and India or many other parts of the world, basically comes from the pesticides. So there is a very important problem, which I did not include my report. It came later to my attention. So that is a very serious issue.
So you're saying a lot of people in the developing worlds are committing suicide by consuming pesticides? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, exactly. That is a kind of like a gun control in the United States. They don't have a gun. The best way, having a pesticide in their kitchen counter, and they use a lot of suicidal impact. That's a very serious issue that many countries are trying to right now ban because of this reason.
Wow. Now, let's go briefly over some of the problems you see with the using of so many pesticides so often. One would be, you know, just the chronic exposure. We're exposed to these things on an ongoing basis. What kind of problems do you see with that?
Can you repeat it? I couldn't hear very
well. One of the problems you mentioned in your report is that when people are exposed to pesticides on a long-term basis, on a chronic basis, where they're always exposed to it, certain problems pop up, like cancer and Alzheimer's and whatnot.
Yes.
Are there any real statistics tying those two together?
The another issue is especially chronic impact of the pesticides. Again, we don't have a very reliable statistics because many parts of the world, doctors don't understand the impact of pesticides clearly. And sometimes peasants and farmers are not able to explain the problem. But if you look at the longer period of the highly intensive pesticide use countries, there is a very serious kind of developmental problems. There is a huge impact on children, especially cancers and blood diseases or hyperactivity, Alzheimer's. For instance, Alzheimer's is an interesting case. You don't see too much in developing countries Alzheimer's because people don't live that long to get Alzheimer's. But there is a very kind of the research is right now here and there, but there is no comprehensive data that I can explain. But there are lots of reports the highly hazardous pesticides really in part of the Parkinson's diseases and a series of the cancers and some kind of infertility problems. And the children actually are the most dangerous situation because they are younger, their immune system is not strong enough, and also they are less weight, and the more pesticides in terms of their body weight is they are exposed more serious weight. So the especially children are children of the farmers, and the, how farmers bring the pesticides to home or take their children to the
places. Okay, folks, a quick break right now, but when we get back, we're going to ask Hillel, do we need pesticides to feed the world and to feed the future populations of the world? I'm going to think she's going to give us a surprise. Stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, we have been told many millions of times that we need pesticides to feed the world. Well, Dr. Hillel Elver stood up in front of the United Nations and said, it's a myth. Pesticides have nothing to do with feeding the hungry. Dr. Hillel, that must have been quite a statement. I saw an article about it on the in the Wall Street Journal, so I expected you raise some ruffles with that one, huh?
Well, that's a very misleading sentence to put them together. Yes, feeding the world is an important part of the agricultural policy. Actually, feeding the world should be a kind of sovereign rights for each government, each state, and each people, not the sort of global power would feed us that we have to expect feeding by others. That's a one problem.
Okay, good.
The second, now, if you look at the FAO calculations, we have right now more food production food in the world feeding more than 7 billion people as of today. And so the problem is not the production, but distribution, inequality, and the poverty. So you can produce more and more food or basically crops that much more rather than food. For instance, we talk about the biofuel type of crops or soya production for the animals or cotton or palm oil. All these things are nothing to do with feeding the world. So that's
Wait a minute. I don't understand. What do you mean don't have anything to do with feeding the world? I mean, we're growing those crops to feed the world, aren't we?
No, most of the time it's not. You know, if you really feed the world, yes, there are production. There are food already right now. Why we can't feed the world? because of the pesticides, because we don't use enough pesticides? Certainly not that. But some countries are poorer, and there's a distribution problem. There's an international trade regulations. So the feeding or eliminating hunger, let's put it this way, feeding the world, I don't like this sentence. Eliminating hunger and food insecurity is much more to do with the food policies rather than using intensive pesticides, because we have already enough food for the world to feed everyone else.
Well, let me go back to the issue of strawberries. That both of these new items came across my desk pretty much the same time, and I got to thinking about strawberry growers I know, and here on the Central California coast, they have really revolutionized the whole business of growing strawberries, you know, whereas strawberries traditionally was a gypsy business because you had to keep on the move. You couldn't leave, you know, have crops in the ground continually in one place because the soil pathogens would take over and kill the plants. So you had to grow your strawberries one place one year and move on down the line. And then, you know, we've also figured out how to extend the season of strawberries. My goodness, we're growing strawberries now 9 months a year. So it's a tremendously technologically precise business and costing a lot of money. So those farmers who are in the business of growing strawberries are going to do everything they can to guarantee that the money they invest in growing strawberries is going to bear fruit. And so I think they rely on pesticides to make that guarantee. And you know, with respect to that, most other farmers in the world are doing the same thing. You know, look at corn and soybean and whatnot. They're using tremendous amounts of pesticides to guarantee that the money that they have invested will bear fruit. But you look at the price of strawberries, you know, a regular basket of strawberries at the supermarket the other day cost $4. A basket of strawberries grown without pesticides, $7. Much more expensive to grow strawberries without pesticides than with. Doesn't that have something to do with feeding the world's hungry as well, that relative price difference?
Well, that's a very good example. We don't feed the world with strawberries, first of all. Strawberries is what we call specialty food. So we are not dealing with when we feeding the world with strawberries.
Yes,
and
but...
You are right about it. If we have enough financial means, we go to go organic strawberry, which is much more expensive than the mass production of the strawberry. There is a problem there too. I'm not saying that, but everything is about economic power of the people. Why we have to eat four seasons strawberry rather than only strawberry season? Because when we are younger, maybe you can remember, we can only eat strawberry in a seasonal. Now, because of the mass production and scientific development, we are able to eat strawberry in California or in Europe or any place in the developed world for season. But when you go to Africa, this is not the case. So there is a significant kind of inequality in the world in relation to what we eat and how we are able to eat. So even in the United States, many parts of the United States, they call a food desert, which means there is not enough place to get the food for people that they live in. So right. The issue is a very economic and a very serious and the production of food.
Mm-hmm. So then you really relate the right to food to a human construct. It's not really a technological construct then. It's really a human problem.
Definitely. Yes, I'm glad you said that, because we are looking at this issue from the perspective of human rights, which means poverty, equality, discrimination, who is reaching what. That's what we are doing, is because I am not an agroecologist, put it this way, I'm not a technical person, I'm a human rights lawyer. So we look at the issue from the human rights perspective. If you look at the, for instance, strawberries, which is a very good example, who produced the strawberries? The people that work in Central California, which I live in Santa Barbara, I know very well.
Sure.
These are basically undocumented workers. And they don't have any health insurance. They don't have any kind of rights that we have to deal with their own health, but we just eat the strawberries. That's a very serious human rights issue. We have to look at the workers. How are we going to protect our workers if the farmers are really protecting their workers?
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, but we really got you going now. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Dr. Hillel Elver and you, 831-479-1080. Do we need pesticides to feed the world?
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, they say we need pesticides to feed the world, and especially the future populations of the world. But Dr. Hillel Elver says, no, that's a myth. We don't. And so right now, I think what we should do is ask a strawberry farmer if he can grow strawberries without pesticides. Rory, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. And yes, Michael, they can be grown organically. They're grown organically all the time. Expect 60% of the production, 65, maybe 70, in some best-case scenarios of the conventionally grown, some worse, some higher, some lower. You know how it goes. So,
and that's kind of that's kind of reflective in the price, right? Whereas a regular...
Well, sure.
You can buy a regular basket for $4 and the organic basket for $7.
There's a lot of conversion to organic in strawberries in California because the market is demanding it, which is the way it should be. This should be market-driven. I wanted to ask your guest, though. She said she's a lawyer. She says she's not an agronomist, and I understand that. But she also stated that strawberry pickers don't have health insurance. And I just want to confront her and say that is absolutely untrue. And, in fact, it's the larger berry production companies that do provide health insurance to their field labor. Just wondering where you came up with the idea that they don't have health insurance.
Dr. Hillel?
Yes. If the workers are undocumented, They don't have a health insurance.
That's wrong. They have health insurance. The big companies, the Wellpicks, the Giants, the Driscoll production companies provide health insurance for their laborers in California.
Even undocumented ones?
Absolutely. They all have, listen, Michael, they all have documents. Are you kidding me? Come on. The illegal aliens always have good paperwork, so that's beside the point. If they're in the field and they're on the payroll, the larger companies provide health insurance. So your guess is absolutely wrong, which leads me to wonder what else is she saying that's not true. She just sounds like a UN busybody.
Well, wait a minute.
I mean, we want strawberries for 12 months out of the year. Whose business is that? We can grow strawberries in California 12 months out of the year. So we like our strawberries 12 months out of the year. So who is she to come along and say, well, we don't need vegetables and fruits out of season?
Well, let her respond to that. Thank you for your call, Rory.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me answer right now. First, the farmer started that he's an organic farmer, and because of this, of course, it's much more expensive, understandable. But then he shifted on completely industrial strawberry production and started to defending on that. I am not going to against right now what Driscoll is doing, but what we have receiving from many NGOs in California there's a serious problem, especially undocumented workers have no health insurance whatsoever. And there are series of the reports, after reports in California is coming from. I am sure there are some big corporations have any health insurance, but this doesn't mean that every farmer, every farm workers in California have a health insurance.
Yeah, I would assume that would be right, Dr. Hillel. But in defense of what Rory was saying, it's really hard for these guys to find laborers. So now I suspect they're having to pay more and more and more and more to attract them, which is the way I think it should be when it gets right down to it. But yes. let me, instead of getting bogged down with just strawberries, the same is true if you're going... the same technological barriers are true if you're growing soybeans or corn in the Midwest, for example. You only have like one person is now has 1,000 acres of crops out there, and you have to rely on those pesticides to bring your crop in, because without pesticides, you're going to have to do it some other way, and that other way is going to mean you're going to need people.
Okay, here is the case. The corn and soy is completely different than the strawberries. The vegetables and fruits, as I said, specialty kind of agriculture, it needs more workers. You are talking about the massive agricultural production, which is basically corn and soy, and mostly are not for the people. They are basically either biofuel or animal food. Okay, mm-hmm. So
which are then eaten by people?
Yeah. And they basically, these are genetically engineered productions. Genetically engineered productions need a systemic pesticide, which is different than the spraying pesticides in strawberry, or I don't know how they do it. That's a totally different ball game. We can't really make the comparison between the two.
Well, other than both rely on pesticides to satisfy their production requirements. I'm just wondering if that kind of production could exist without pesticides. And I'm looking at it, and Rory is right, people do grow organic strawberries, but they cost a whole bunch more. And people do grow organic corn, but mostly not in the United States anymore. And so it seems like we're kind of stuck with this stuff unless we really change the way we do things. So when we get back from this break, I'd like to ask you, Dr. Hillel, what can we do to really change things, both on a legal footing, but also on a technological one? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, Dr. Hillel Elver. The question of the day: can we get by without pesticides, or would we go hungry? What do you think? 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain Radio.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, they say we need pesticides to feed the world, but Dr. Hillel Elver says that's a myth. I look at agriculture and I see the extremely complicated and sophisticated and technologically precise production systems that essentially rely on pesticides. And I think, if we pull those pesticides out of those systems, I'm thinking a lot of it's going to go poof and there won't be any food. But let's turn to Dr. Hillel Elver and say, Doctor, what can we do? If we do without those pesticides, how will we feed ourselves in the world and the future?
Okay, here's the important point. In order to feed the world, the people, we need a sustainable agriculture. Sustainable agriculture means protection of the soil, protection of the biosystem, biodiversity, and water, clean water. So when we really heavily use chemical, highly hazardous pesticides. I'm not saying they're all pesticides under the world, but there is a highly hazardous pesticide and intensively used. This is not only dangerous to human health, but also dangerous to soil. If you do very kind of intensive monoculture agriculture in the land, the soils are going to be very tired, and after a certain time, you can't really get enough production there, and also you have to use more pesticides. More pesticides makes a more problem. That's why, but there is an alternative for this. There is a sustainable agriculture system around the world, and what we call agroecology. And agroecology is using the biology, biosystem, ecosystem to make the complete cycle with using less, minimum or no pesticides. That's a possibility, and the FAO or many of the institutions are working on that, and they are implementing many parts of the world, especially Latin American countries, for instance, and also in the United States. There are many farms are now shifting the agroecology, which is pretty much are solving the pesticide problem.
If we do that, if we take pesticides out and turn to a more biological system of production and eschew the chemicals, as it were, does not that require more smart people working the land? Aren't we going to need a lot more smart people to manage these biological systems?
Two things. We need traditional knowledge, which is disappearing right now. Keep the traditional knowledge from the grandparents, how they do the farming, plus the new technology together. We need smart people and the traditional knowledge together. If we make these two together, we will not be in a problem in the future.
Where do we get all those smart people? Well, I guess that's going to be the question we're kind of left with, because we're just running out of time as we talk with Dr. Hillel Elver, who is a professor of international law and the UN special rapporteur on the right to grow food. That's what I'm going to do when I grow up, is become a rapporteur. It sounds like so much fun. Dr. Hillel, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all out there for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food.
Thank you very much,
everyone. You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.